Welcome to the Theorist-Composer Collaboration, a podcast interview series highlighting modern composers and their compositions. My name is Aaron DiZarilla. I'm the host of this podcast and also a graduate music theory student at Florida State University. Today I'll be talking with the composer Isabella Temperville once again, who, alongside her album The Recusant's Dream, is the featured guest for this episode. I talk with Isabella about her interests, catch up with her since the last time she was on the podcast, discuss her master's thesis, further work constructing the multimedia project in The Recusant's Dream, and much more. So, without further ado, this is an excerpt from The Recusant's Dream, and welcome to the TCC. Again, the music that you were just listening to is from the album The Recusant's Dream by the composer Isabella Temperville, who, alongside her music, is the featured guest for this episode. That leads me to welcome Isabella Temperville back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. For newer, new-ish viewers or listeners to this show, I had Isabella on originally back last summer on, I looked, episode 12, which this will be episode 31 when it gets released, which is quite a span of time. But for people who did not listen to that first episode or quite haven't to yet, that's okay. How about you go ahead and introduce yourself personally, professionally, academically, whatever you choose.
Cool. So I am Isabella. I'm now a second year master's student studying music composition at Louisiana State University. I got my undergraduate degree from Christopher Newport University in 2023, and I immediately went to grad school after getting that first degree. But honestly, like, the main thing about me is that I love video game music. It's literally my passion, and that's what I want my composition career to go towards. So I'm hoping to start doing video game composition in the near future, but I also am working on this cool little passion project, which is the multimedia project that we're going to be discussing today.
Certainly. And we really did back in episode 12. That was at the time that, it's still, I can't really say what my favorite episode is anymore. After you get to this amount, it's kind of a lot of it can be a little bit of a blur, but certainly at the time and for quite a while, definitely my favorite episode, episode 12,
No, for sure.
when we talked about Infernal Suite, which was your previous album that had to do with this multimedia project. And we'll be touching on the lore and the different things of the Recusant's dream, of course, because that's the only way that a lot of it may make sense. But if you want a really deep dive, then I recommend you go back and you listen to episode 12, because we really did. And it was a lot of fun. I actually think it's my longest episode, even after all these months. I think that one is still the longest. But
That's like actually insane. I think about that sometimes. I'm like, how did we like sit there and talk for that long? That's crazy.
I know, it was quite a lot, but it was very cool. And so, well, for the people who are initiated, or even just anyone curious, it's been, oh, maybe half a year, maybe not literally, but basically half a year. We both, you and I, are about to start our final semester of our respective master's degrees. What have you been up to since then?
Honestly, just trying to get this thesis done. I've been working like my part-time job a whole lot, and they don't know this yet, but I'm gonna put in my 2 weeks very soon because I want to use my last semester to like really focus on my artistic portfolio, and I want to start taking like commissions and things like that for music. So that's something I'm getting ready to do, but this past semester, like the last fall semester, I basically was just working on thesis stuff, a lot of like miscellaneous tasks. Like I really just took a lesson, and that was like the only class type thing that I had to do, but it was a lot of like housekeeping stuff. And this next semester is also going to be really busy with recitals and the graduation process. But I've honestly just been doing so much school.
Do you have to do
And
a
of course,
composition recital?
yeah, I do. I don't know the recital date yet. They literally just sent me like the calendar invite to go ahead and schedule all that. But I do have to do a master's recital and then like a thesis defense type thing, which they haven't really given me much information on that. All I know right now is that like I need a committee and I went ahead and sent out those emails. So we're preparing,
Sure. And so, and tell me if I'm wrong, but the Recusant's dream, what we're talking about today, is your thesis.
It is indeed my thesis, yes.
That's some cool stuff. That's very intimidating, I'm sure, for yourself. Thankfully, my degree track does not necessitate a thesis. I'm on a non-thesis track, so I don't have to do that. There is comprehensive exam where we're given a tonal and then an atonal piece of music, just random. Well, it's not random to them. And we have to analyze it, turn in the analysis, and then defend the analysis. But I'd rather take that over a semester-long thesis work and then defense and so on. And personally, yeah. Well, this is kind of forward to the very end of the episode where we talk about what's next for you, but I'm just curious because I just got done going through a lot of this. Are you going for a DMA?
So I want one. Like I know at my core that I want one, but I also so badly like just want to start my life, if that makes sense. Like I think I said this last time, like I've been a student my whole life and I think I'm just ready to kind of get established. I mean, my partner is graduating law school in a year and we're planning on kind of merging our lives back together because we lived together during undergrad and then during grad school we both went our separate ways, but we're trying to come back together like to actually begin our lives. And if I go for a DMA, like that's gonna add more time. I'm just like I'm low-key kind of exhausted of school, if that makes sense.
I don't know if you've heard on recently on the program or anything that I post, but I just got done. We messaged about it because we were talking about this episode for a month or two, but we were both very busy with respective things. But I just got done No, not even just got done. It was over a month ago with PhD applications. And I'm starting to hear back from them now, which is terrifying. Actually, on Tuesday, well, people listening to this don't know, but how about 2 days from the recording of this, I have an interview with the University of Minnesota for PhD. So we again, I might repeat myself a bunch with this, but we, talked a lot about your own stylistic self in the previous episode. But from what I recall, and what I mean by that is I listened to the episode again a couple days ago in prep for this is, so video game music composition, certainly. I remember hints of Dark Souls, Final Fantasy, and Kingdom Hearts. Can you talk more about that influence and what it means to you?
Yeah, certainly. Gosh, I don't even know where to begin because I feel like I gave kind of a brief overview of that in the last episode, just how, oh, I grew up listening to the Kingdom Hearts soundtrack. When I was younger, that's like what got me into music. But I mean, so I also like went back and I listened to the episode recently just to kind of like, refresh myself on the whole interview process. But I was particularly like focused on the question where you asked me, like, oh, how would you describe yourself as a composer? Because I wasn't really able to answer that question at first. And I think now I can sort of answer it. It's not like a complete answer, but I think I have a better answer now. And I've noticed recently in my composition process that I will go and I will listen to these video game soundtracks that I love so dearly, and I'll actually take notes on them. And when I go to compose, I will pull from these notes, like things that I like in these video game soundtracks. And honestly, the way I would describe myself is like a leitmotif goblin or like a leitmotif crow, because I'm always collecting bits and pieces from other music that I like. And I feel like there are a lot of composers that do that, but specifically like video game tracks, like that's what I do with it. So it's, I don't want to get into like the whole, oh, like it inspired me when I was a kid, because that's just the music that I listen to. But like nowadays, I'm finding myself like actually taking notes on the music that I'm listening to and finding things that I like. So I don't know if that completely answers like the question in terms of, how it influenced it. Well, I guess it does. I don't even know.
How has that influence changed now that you're closer to the end of your master's? Because I mean, like a ma I, people always say this, have said it, that a master's feels like a blink of an eye. And yeah, they're right. They're right. Like at the beginning, I was like, oh, really? 2 years is 2 years, but two years is not much when you're busy all the time. And so, how has that style developed or changed for you?
Yeah, so I'm gonna go back and say that when I got out of my undergraduate program, I was very used to writing like these weird experimental type pieces that I don't want to say that I wasn't like super connected to, but it was definitely an environment where like I was told like what to compose, like you have to compose like this, like kind of experimenting. And I understand that at the time, it was just a matter of expanding like my compositional toolbox, learning techniques and things like that. And now that I've been able to do my master's, I've gotten more freedom, which has been very nice. And with that freedom, I've been able to kind of go back to my roots and actually pull from music that I like and implement it into my own music. So that's been really nice. It's been this like really cool transition of, I don't want to call it academic music, but writing like really experimental things to writing things that are more authentic to me, I feel like. It's been really strange, honestly. I don't know how else to describe it other than it's just been going from being told what to write and then actually being able to write what I want to write.
Well,
And it's been nice.
that's unfortunate for your undergraduate, but I guess that is the benefit of graduate school, is finding your own voice in that. And so let's talk about finding your voice in that. Your ultimate project for your master's degree, the Recusant's Dream. the album that we're talking about today. So let's get into it. So this was, it's not necessarily, I mean, it's new in the terms of time, space, and the universe, but it's been out for a little bit at this point. Which, can you talk about just the lead up to the project, releasing it, anything you want with that?
So I know we talked about this last time too, because I had alluded to like a summer release to this new project. listen,
Man, your Instagram posts are really funny, where just months and months and months of, I promise it's almost done, I promise it's almost done.
Listen, I'm about to get into like the reason why it took so long.
Okay.
But yeah, so it was originally supposed to come out in the summer of 2024. But sadly, we had a death in the family, and so I had to return to Virginia, and I stayed in Virginia until the beginning of the fall semester. So I kind of had to put it on pause because I was with family, and that honestly wasn't at the forefront of my mind at the time. But I began working on it again after the fall semester started. And I ended up sharing it with my applied lessons instructor, and she was actually the one who suggested that I push the release date back to November, because when I got back to school, I was like, okay, I have to push this thing out as fast as possible because my 102 followers on Instagram are going to get mad at me or whatever. And so she was like, no, I think you should push it back because I want you to market for it, which that was something. I can talk about that a little bit too at some point, but
I totally want you to. So was it your applied lessons instructor or yourself? I'm just surprised that this is accepted as a thesis project for composition. It's a little bit unorthodox compared to what I normally see for a master's thesis.
Right. So in terms of a thesis, like I originally thought that they were going to make me write a paper, but at my school, I was told that your thesis is essentially just a big piece of music.
That's what I've heard from my colleagues as well, too.
And so that was also something that I don't want to say it was my professor's idea, but she kind of like, she kind of put it into my head that like, she was like, oh, anything can be your thesis. And I ended up showing her, like I said, I showed her the album when I actually finished it. And she was like, oh, this is good. Like, I really like this. It really seems to represent who you are as a composer. And I think it's your best work so far. And it was just kind of this moment when she said that, when she said, this is like the best representation of like who you are as a composer up to date, it kind of hit me. I was like, okay, that's my thesis then. Like, it was kind of this like epiphany aha moment where, I don't know, because I had spent so long trying to think like, oh, I don't know what kind of piece I'm gonna write for this thesis because it's important, like it's literally what's getting me the degree. It was just one of those like, maybe the thesis was the friends or the music we made along the way type situations. So I guess I had been working on it. It just, you know, when she said that this is like the best representation of who you are as an artist to date, that's when it really hit me, I think. That's when the decision was made, at least.
Sure. That's really cool that your faculty were so open to this sort of project. I can't really speak to the professors at Florida State because I've never seen someone come up with something like this for a thesis, but that is very cool that that is accepted for it. And so let's talk about that marketing, which you have done on your social media platforms, and I followed as you released. You essentially gave very little lore dumps with some audio preview of the tracks of the album, along with some of your creative process, which anyone navigating to Isabella's social media accounts can see very clearly. Links in the description, of course. But can you tell me a bit about why? You did, other than obviously you wanted to promote the album, but why you did it in the way that you did and what that was like.
Okay. So like I said, my professor pushed me to market it. If she hadn't like said anything about it, I would have just pushed it out as fast as possible. But when she brought this idea to me, I was a little hesitant at first because, like, how do you even go about marketing an IP that's not, official, let alone like a soundtrack for like an IP that doesn't exist? Like, it's literally in my brain. I'm like, how do I market something that's not already there, if that makes sense? But she was actually getting ready to release her own album, and so she was doing her own series of marketing. So I actually, looked at the way that she was promoting her music. She did kind of a similar thing with the videos where she would take a track from her CD and then, make like an iMovie clip that gives a little bit of information about the track, like who the performers were, what it's inspired by, that kind of thing. And so I took that idea and I decided to create little lore dump clips to go with the little clip of music. And in terms of like the little mini process program notes, that was completely my idea. She hadn't done that yet, but it was kind of an expansion of the lore dump clip. And I figured if I write program notes and I post them, it kind of gives me more material to work with in terms of marketing. So now I have like, more to post and more to expose people to. So yeah, that's it in terms of marketing.
That's it.
It was
All
kind of
right.
weird, yeah. I didn't like doing it. It's kind of, I don't even know how to describe it. It was, I know it's necessary. It's just, how do you promote this kind of music? I felt kind of at a loss of how to do it. And so this was just me kind of experimenting with that.
Yeah, I really like the artwork that you attached to the different things. I thought that added a lot of the biblical, like Renaissance painting style things, which attach to the kind of atmosphere. And let's talk about the atmosphere. So, Isabella did call it earlier a multimedia project, and it certainly is. And if it hasn't already been said clearly, I think it has enough, but I'll just say it again. That Recusant's Dream is more than just an album, and it's more than just a concept album. It is the pairing of a larger world that Isabella is the creator and curator of over many, many years. As I remember you saying the other episode, it goes back to things that you came up with in middle and then high school and undergrad. And so this story, this world has been a big part of everything that you've done. Now, if you want a really anal explanation or exploration of the lore, I'm going to reference you back to episode 12, but I'm going to allow Isabella to. I know this is one of the things that we talked about last time about how to present it, is that you can't really just give a quick explanation about something you've worked on for a large chunk of your life, but what can you tell the audience about what this multimedia project, like the story of it, and then Recusant's Dream?
Okay,
Give it your
perfect.
best shot.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, don't worry. I think I got it. So, in the briefest of summaries, this narrative is dubbed the Firebird Project. That's just like the concept name. I don't have a clear name for the actual narrative yet, but that's what I'm calling it. But anyways, it takes place in an alternate world where God is actually a power-hungry angel that has all of angel kind kind of brainwashed and under his control. And demons are sort of eternally punished by a curse that is that the so-called God inflicted upon them in like the ancient times. So that's like the briefest, most condensed summary of the actual lore aspect that I could possibly give. The actual story follows a girl who is a demon who has to kind of navigate this world while having this all-consuming curse, which is the Recusant's curse. And at first she believes that the enemy is other demons, as they are like purposely pitted against each other by the angels, keeping the conflict sort of controlled between them. But this actually slowly evolves. She then realizes, oh, the enemy is actually the angels who are the oppressors. But then it finally reaches the establishment where she realizes the enemy is the establishment or God himself, which is the very entity that casted the recusant's curse in the first place. So that's like the most abbreviated summary I could give about this story because it's truly a lot.
Yeah, that was pretty well rounded. It took us collectively about like 45 minutes to go through that amount of lore and not even that much detail last time. So that's pretty good, I would say. And you know what's funny is that this album, The Recusant's Curse, is not beat by beat necessarily, but it's a retelling of the established, like, the world lore from the first half of your explanation. Not necessarily the narrative, but the lore. Am I right about that?
The album The Recusant's Dream is more so about the lore, whereas Infernal Suite was kind of telling bits and pieces of this story, like the actual story that I had in mind. Recusant's Dream is 100% connected to lore, and I think the reason is because at the time when we first did that episode, I had been working so much on lore, so that's just where my brain was at the time. So, but I'm ready to like actually get back into the actual narrative writing, which will be nice.
Sure, I mean the lore itself is heavy. It's like
Dude, it's yeah, I'm so sick of it. I'm not sick of it, but it gets to a point where I'm like, okay, like I have this lore established. Now I want to put characters into this world and I want to do things with them and I want to actually write the story that has the lore with it. I don't even know. It's a lot. It's literally so much information, and I have Google Docs upon Google Docs that just explain all of it. So I don't even know, man. It's crazy.
Well, let's get into it. I hope you're not too sick of it because we're going to retread it again in this episode. The Recusant's Motif. On Instagram and earlier in this episode, you mentioned about your love and use of leitmotifs, reoccurring ideas that show up in music. They're meant to represent ideas and sometimes people or characters. And on Instagram, you describe this album and starting with this track, The Recusant's Motif, you describe this whole project as a leitmotif fest. Can you describe that a bit and talk a bit about this first track, The Recusant's Motif?
Yeah, of course. So the Recusant's Motif was originally titled Surrender and Sleep, and it was written in 2019, right before I was about to start my undergraduate program. It belonged to another project that was related to a story that I'm no longer working on. It's kind of dead and buried, and I just have this like 17 song collection sitting on my computer. And I kind of forgot about it until I rediscovered it this past year, 2024. And I was kind of having like difficulty getting ideas for new music. And I found this piece and I figured that since, I'm not really doing anything with it right now, what if I just pulled all of well, not all of my melodic material, but what if I pulled a lot of melodic material from this piece that I wrote in 2019 that's just kind of sitting there? So it's technically not like a canon track to this world. This piece is on the album more so to just kind of give, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like physical evidence to me that I have improved as a composer, because this piece was written in 2019 and the rest of the music on this album does pull content from it. So it's just kind of interesting to see like where I was in 2019 and then, be immediately slapped in the face with music that I wrote recently. It's a really cool development, I feel like. But yeah, it's just that's just kind of the material that I used for this album. It really has nothing to do with the lore. So
Fair enough. And certainly the next track does. Now, the second track on the album is titled Prelude, and in parentheses, The Vision. Now, I know very well what this is about, and of course you do as well. But before you get into the mechanics of the track, can you tell us a bit about the story? And now we're going to have to get into a little bit of detail about the lore background of the Firebird saga, with the Vision. So if you could do the honors with that.
Perfect. Okay. So the vision refers to like a little premonition that Lucifer has after he is, well, it's a premonition he has, and it's in reference to what the angels are doing with all these souls. I'm not going to really get into all of the nitty-gritty because we already spoke about lore in the last episode. All you really need to know is that he sees something terrible, and this terrible vision, it encourages him to defect from the Order of the Archangels, who he had originally pledged his allegiance to. And in a sense, this piece is, it's a vision in both like the narrative sense, but also in the literal sense, because it li like it foreshadows every single piece on the album. I'm trying to find the right word for it. It has fragments of the other tracks. So it is a musical premonition, so to speak. But yeah, that's I can literally get into like the nitty-gritty, but I'm not even gonna do that. It'll take me forever to describe, as you
Sure,
know.
yes. I mean, it would take me forever too. It's not necessarily simple, but I remember half a year ago when we did talk about it, Lucifer's vision, this premonition, was horrifying to him, but it was not spoken what was in the vision, purposely ambiguous for a later telling. And I remember in the episode, it was pretty funny, you said you actually really didn't know what he saw yet. You don't have to say it yet, but do you know what he saw?
No,
No,
I would be so real with you.
okay.
And honestly, maybe it's not for me to know. Maybe I'm just as in the dark as
Oh,
everyone else. You know, I feel like sometimes it's best to leave things unanswered because I know with me in media, sometimes I like to project like my own thoughts and ideas onto unanswered questions. And right now, I don't think the actual contents of the vision are necessarily like super important to the plot. It's more so like what he does after seeing this vision, like the actions that he takes, that's important. So I might come up with, you know, what was actually seen in the vision later. But as for now, I just don't think that's for me to know quite yet, even though I'm literally the creator and I'm making this stuff up.
sure. And now on to the third track, the one after it, titled The Order, which is in reference to the order of archangels who are going around stealing the souls of living things for themselves. The order being the group that Lucifer was a part of, and after his premonition, the vision of the previous track is no longer part of. What can you talk about the order track?
Sure. So I had really mixed feelings about the order when I first wrote it. I honestly wasn't in the mood to compose anything, but it was one of those times where I was like, I'm a composer, like I have to sit down and I have to put, you know, I have to put my head into it and I just have to do it. So it was definitely an exercise in working through a creative block, but also not half-assing the piece. And, you know, because sometimes when you're not in the mood to do something, you'll get lazy about it. So I feel like it was a really good exercise. But I am actually really happy with how it turned out. It accomplished what I needed it to, which was serving as a theme for the Order of Archangels. The way I want them to appear in this story is kind of like actual biblical angels, because I think we also discussed before how you know, sometimes in media they're kind of portrayed as like these benevolent creatures, but there are some portrayals of angels that are like horrific, and that's the kind of angel that I wish to portray. It kind of hits on some of like that Lovecraftian horror type genre for me, which I really love. It's honestly inspired a lot of this lore and this story, of just being in the presence of an entity that is so powerful and so all-consuming that you cannot process it and your mind shatters. So that's kind of what I wanted to portray with the order.
Yeah, it's actually, I was thinking about this the previous month around, Christmas time, going to church and hearing the Christmas story again this year, and the part where I think it's the angel Gabriel in the Bible, not your angel Gabriel, appears before Joseph, and the first thing he says is, "Don't be afraid." If you look at really old art, it's specifically old pre Enlightenment artwork of biblical angels, and they are terrifying. So I think when you say that, I think about, you know, the artwork of the angel visiting Joseph for the Christmas story. What if it was more like one of your angels than the typically seen, you know, Sistine Chapel sort of artwork? So very fascinating play on biblical works. So next is the recusant's curse, which is the scourge put upon the angels who sided with Lucifer and who disobeyed this order of, let's face it, evil angels. The Recusant's Curse, it's in the namesake of the album as well, The Recusant's Dream. What can you tell us about The Recusant's Curse?
The Recusant's Curse was actually my favorite piece to write, and I think it's because it's actually just a reimagined version of Surrender and Sleep, which I wrote in 2019, which was Recusant's motive, the first track of the album. And I think it really shows like just how much I've improved as an artist. I mean, contextually, it's like the most important track in the entire album, just because of like what it represents in terms of the actual narrative and the lore. But to me personally, it's very important. It's like physical evidence that I have grown as a composer.
Sure, sure. And so let's get a little lore-like for a second. So the Recusant's Curse is, like, in the lore, is, if I were to compare it, because I know you draw, like, inspiration, is, like, the dark sign or humanity from Dark Souls put upon humankind, and it's, like, a decaying disease that completely debilitates someone. Now, yes. Can you describe it a little bit more than that? I know the affliction is on angels, or does it get transferred to other people? It gets put onto demons too, right?
So the curse gets put onto angels, and when an angel is cursed, that's when they become a demon. That's what marks a demon as a demon. It's kind of like how in Dark Souls, like if you have the dark sign, like you're that's what you are. You're a undead, whatever. So it's kind of like a marker. If you have it, that's what you are. But the next track, The Morning Star Always Falls, is actually, I think that one is about the aftermath of when one succumbs to the curse. So the curse is, it's a consumption type curse. A demon has to constantly feed off of human souls to satiate the curse, or else they will essentially go Hollow, which little Dark Souls reference, but the way I describe it is that you essentially become like a husk of your former self, and it's like a fate worse than death type thing.
Very Dark
And
Souls.
I honestly, I haven't really fleshed out exactly what happens just because I want to, I don't even know how to describe it. I'm like getting off track again, but that's another thing I still have to flesh out a little bit more. All I know is that it's kind of similar to the Dark Souls, like you, the more you die type of thing, like the more hollow you get. It's a consumption.
Sure. And let's talk about that next track that you just brought up, titled Morning Star. And as you describe in your promotional material, it is the ultimate demise of Lucifer. He summons up the people who agree with him, his underlings of angels who follow him to fight against the order, and it goes very poorly, very quickly. It's not even close. Lucifer fails along with his colleagues. That's a weird word to use for this, but and he is the first person to be afflicted by the recusant's curse and dies from it. But he's not fully dead. I remember you saying that, or he might be not fully dead because everything's cyclical. Okay, whatever. So he's dead. He's dead for the most part. And can you talk a bit about this track? But then I also have a follow-up question about something you said in your promotional material about it. But what can you tell us about Morning Star?
Okay, so this track is supposed to be oppressive. I wanted it to represent a kind of like hopelessness in with the current situation, because it very much is about like Lucifer's demise and him succumbing to the recusant's curse, and kind of just all is lost type vibe. And actually, interestingly enough, a lot of people who have listened to the album have cited this piece as their favorite. And that was like really surprising to me, because I would have imagined it would have been like The Vision or the Recusant Strife. Like, it was just surprising to me, and I want to know why this one was their favorite. Yeah, I mean, that's what I can think of off the top of my head about this piece. I mean, just creating that vibe of oppression, I feel.
The vibe of oppression. Nice.
Yes.
Good. Very nice. And so my follow-up is, in your promotional materials, you say that Lucifer said something to his firstborn, which then becomes a rallying cry or motivation to continue the fight against the order. And you say specifically that it is not known what he said. And I'm sure that's an opportunity later on in your story, but do you know what he said?
I'm gonna say what I said earlier.
Okay,
That is not for me to know right now.
fair
And
enough.
I feel like that's okay. Honestly, I'm on the fence right now. I don't know if it's gonna be something like super important, like game changing, like only the firstborn of Lucifer knows this, and it could potentially like, change it, or like, switch tables, whatever. Or if it was something like really sentimental and dumb, because he's like talking to his firstborn son in his like last hour, you know what I'm saying? Like it could have been something really important, or it could have not have been something important. I think that's another instance of not people, but I guess in this case, demons like reacting to something in a certain way. I don't even know.
Fair enough.
Cut that last bit. I started like, I don't even know. I'm. Dude, this is so difficult here at my parents' house. I keep getting distracted.
It's okay. And not to throw it in your face. I had a feeling that the answer was that you didn't quite know yet, but I just wanted to ask because that's the sort of thing where it's like you read that and you're like, "Oh, that's going to be important at some point down the line. That might be yours, who knows."
I
But
think it would be super funny though if we did eventually find out what it was and it was something like dumb, you know? Like you spend all this time like, oh, what he said had to have been so important, like game changing. And then it's just like, I don't know, I love you, son, something like that.
That would be disappointing, depending on how you handle that. And so the fallout from the fall or disappearance, however you want to say, of Lucifer, not Lucifer, and the beginning of what is known as the Infernal War between demons and angels and infighting, and that's where the modern day quote unquote of your narrative comes in, and that's also where the name of the Infernal Suite, the other album, comes from, the Infernal War, the Recusant Strife, the second to last track in the album, is an application of the motifs that you've talked about before, and you describe it as a battle setting of such motifs representing the Infernal War, the war that takes place between angels and demons after the fall of Lucifer, and what leads to the modern setting of the Firebird Saga. That's where we find ourselves. So it's like the beginning of what is known as today in your world, essentially. And you describe this track as one of your favorites. But can you talk a bit about it?
Yeah, so this track literally took me forever to complete. And I think it's because it has the most going on. It has the most material, and it's the longest piece on the album. It's like 5.5 minutes, but there are motific fragments literally everywhere in this piece. And there's even a reference to one winged phoenix towards the end, which is in the Infernal Suite. So you gotta listen to the Infernal Suite to be able to pick up on that. But at the time I was listening to a lot of like the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth soundtrack because that game had just come out. It was like in February of last year when it came out. And so I'd been listening to a lot of those pieces. And I think the influence is very evident if you were to go and listen to the Genova Emergent theme, or at least like the first minute of it, because like when you put it up against what I have written for the Recusant Strife, it's, I don't want to say it's similar, but you can definitely see where I pulled inspiration. I was literally obsessed with that soundtrack for months, and so I think it's super obvious that I really like that soundtrack. But I honestly think it's my favorite because it was the most fulfilling to write. It took the most work and creative energy out of me, but when it was done, it was like, okay, this is literally awesome. Like, it was just one of those moments where I could, I guess, listen to, in the sense, listen to the fruits of my labor. And so that was really nice. It was just very fulfilling to write.
Sure. And so now we lead to the end. We end the album with Nocturne, and in parentheses, the Recusant's Dream. Now, before we actually talk about the music, can you speak why you put the name of the album as the parenthesis title?
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and tell you about the structure of the album real quick because it's connected.
Sure.
If you've noticed, cutting, just pretend that the Recusant's motive isn't even there as the first track. Pretend it starts with the prelude and it ends with the nocturne. It opens and closes with a piano solo, which was very intentional. I originally was just gonna call it, the Recusant's Dream, but I don't know. To me, it was more like, yes, it is a nocturne. Like, it in a classical music sense, that's what it is. That's what it was written to be. Like, it was done like that on purpose. But I kind of wanted to match it up with how the album kind of opens with like the prelude and then the vision in parentheses. So that was more of like a stylistic, that was a stylistic choice on my part, so that the album opened and closed the same way, both in piano solo form, but also name.
Sure, that makes sense. That makes sense. And this kind of bleeds into my next question. But and this is a lore related question. In the grand scheme of the Firebird saga, where do we find ourselves at the end of this album? Because this album, The Recusant's Dream, is essentially a retelling or close to step by step of the overarching lore. To the current state of the world. So, where are we with things at the conclusion of Nocturne?
So, Nocturne is most definitely an aftermath of this infernal war. After the infernal war, that's kind of like where we get into like the modern day setting. But I didn't really have a lore implication for like what this particularly represents. To me, it's more of kind of a time to think about what's happened and what's about to happen. Yeah, so the way I describe it is that the nocturne is the ultimate consequence. Whether like this aftermath of the infernal war is positive or negative, that's kind of up to you as the listener. And when you actually listen to the nocturne, you realize that the main core theme of it has been within the album all along. It's been like sprinkled here and there, but it's not until you listen to the nocturne that you're like, oh, I've actually heard this before. And kind of like how I was saying about how the album opens and closes the same way, the way I literally have notes about this album like for like lore purposes because I want to remain consistent, but the way I wrote it was that like with the prelude of vision, a vision is what is wanted, or a vision is what will happen, what is going to occur, whereas a dream is what is wanted to happen, sort of. So it's kind of like this, I don't even know. It's like this, I don't want to say dichotomy. I'm trying to find the right word.
Maybe it's
Kind of like
not
a
a,
parallel.
maybe you're not meant to know the word. Who knows?
Maybe I'm not meant to know the word, but I just thought it was interesting to how it begins with a vision, which is like the predetermined, like what is set to happen. And then the dream at the end is what is desired, I suppose.
Sure. And so here's a bigger question. Going forward in your ongoing saga to flesh out this multimedia project, so you've done the Infernal Suite, and here the Recusant Dream album is your thesis project. And earlier you said you want to start looking more towards the actual narrative, not so much the world building. What does that mean in terms of your next creative steps for the Firebird Saga?
Okay, so I do have a little inkling of an idea for another sort of narrative related album. This would be a shorter album, like maybe 3 to 4 songs is what I'm thinking, because this would be about two specific characters. So this next project, I think, would specifically be a character album, rather than like an overarching lore album, just to j just because like I feel like I've put so much time and energy into fleshing out this big lore and like this huge story that I need to focus on like the actual inhabitants of this world. So I want to write a character album next, I feel like.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you certainly need to build the world around them to talk about them, and it seems like you've spent enough time doing that for yourself at
Indeed.
least. And so before we move on to the last parts of this podcast, is there anything else you want to say about this album, The Recusant's Dream?
I'm personally super proud of it. I think it's my best work up to date. And like my professor was telling me, like it is most definitely the best representation of the kind of music that I want to put out into the world currently. So I'm super proud of it. And I hope that people enjoy listening to it because I put a lot of time and effort into it. And I know it took a while to push out, but you know what? It's there for people to listen to. So hoping it's good.
Oh, it certainly is. And links are, of course, in the description to platforms that you can listen to this album on. And so, typically at this part of the podcast, I ask questions like, what does music mean to you? What does composition mean to you? But you've been here before. And so we did a little bit of reflection earlier on, but when it comes to music academia, composition academia, something well, not composition in my case, but we both find ourselves in, you're nearing the end of your master's. Looking back on that time, what is something constructive you can say about yourself, the system, do's and don'ts? Well, what are you thinking about coming to the end of your master's?
That is a very loaded question, I feel like.
That's what we do here. Loaded questions.
Indeed. I don't want to be that person and say that I fear that a lot of, or at least in my perspective, a lot of music academia is, I don't want to use the word pretentious, but it can be.
It is.
I've often found myself feeling, I don't want to say inferior, but I mean, I compose a lot in digital audio workstations. I compose a lot with MIDI and synths, electronics, that kind of thing. And it's really strange to be in a place where the majority of people are working on like super experimental things and, you know, writing their music like on paper and using notation software. So that's like, it's really strange, but also it's also really cool because it's like we're all composers. Like it doesn't matter how you compose. I just wish that, I'm not saying that this is a problem with my particular school, but you know, I just wish that there was less of like a pretentious air about it, I feel like, because it can feel like that sometimes, especially when you go into like anything artistic. Like, I mean, art is subjective. I feel like it doesn't matter how you create your art as long as you're creating it. Like, it shouldn't matter like how you do it as long as you're doing it. I don't even know, man. Like, we're all composers, I guess.
Yes, I can relate on some level. One point of comparison I like is the DAW thing. I have now it's a little bit different. It's really interesting hearing that from a composer necessarily, because with composers it's even a little bit more unforgivable to look down or not understand a DAW, because I mean that's like the most common way that music is made now. Sorry, not sorry, everybody, but that's just the truth. But I mean, I have colleagues who still say DAWs. So I mean, like, and don't know what it stands for. Not, you know, knowing that it's a digital audio workstation and that you say DAW, not DAW. But you know, it's not that the knowledge or the awareness of things like that is not valued, but it's like seen as, oh, I don't need to know that, when it's like the most easy way to convey and talk with people. Like, for example, in the songwriting class that I teach, which is for non-music majors, we do work in DAWs at the end of the semester to write music and do things like that. And this is a struggle with that class that I have, and even with myself, because I'm not a composer. There's no one better to teach a songwriting class than a non. than someone who doesn't write music. But one of the biggest struggles is applying, you know, for the most part, classical theory to then in a DAW to a room full of people who don't know either. And, you know, sometimes the avenues to do so can be looked down upon. And even I understand the, yeah, I agree. It's hard to just say that it's all pretentious, because it's not. And it's, but also there's still like the stink of it a lot of times, because my personal research is in pop music, specifically right now, at least rap and hip hop and a little bit EDM. I'm working on a Charli XCX project. Actually, I think I messaged you about that a while ago. And there's, at least for music theory, I'll speak on that because I know about it. There is space for it. There's plenty of space for it. But that doesn't mean that there isn't, for some reason, really harsh judgment from other areas of the field for no reason. And it's like there's a whole, you know, I went to the Society for Music Theory conference in Jacksonville, Florida. I loved it. There were so many different interest groups and like sessions that have to do with music that I care about. Saw presentations on reggaeton, on metal music, pop, punk. There were multiple K-pop, J-pop presentations. So there is space, and there's people, you know, it's supported by the institution because they get to speak there. And there's clearly people working on it. But also at the same time, there's some like criminal side eye from the like, but why? You know, we're all, in our case, it's like we're all music researchers, what's your problem? And in your case, we're all composers, what's your problem? So it definitely does exist, even if it's not like, it doesn't disallow you from working on it, but it's something you gotta like put your head on a small swivel about.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think my main point is that people just need to chill out, you know? Like, it's not that big of a deal. We're all making music, and I feel like that's what matters.
I'll say one of the biggest gifts of this podcast, which there are many, but this is a personal thing for me that I really love. Before the promotion of this podcast, I was never personally on Facebook, Composer Facebook is something else. There are daily hot takes of a wide variety. Composer Facebook is a treasure trove of entertainment. Just some people who need to be far away from a keyboard in some cases, just putting out some real hot takes out into the world on things that they just need to calm down about most of the time.
That's so real, yeah.
All right, so rambling with all that aside. So, as said a couple times, you know, you're coming to the conclusion of your master's. You're getting ready to live life a little bit. You know, what a crazy thing to
it's like think. Insane.
It sounds like you're going to be on a more permanent way reunited with your partner physically, which congratulations on that. Coming up soon, you are done with your thesis, kind of. You have to defend it and then you have a recital and so on. But, you know, when I ask this, you know, I'm really thinking like out in the future, you know, what's next for you?
That's another very loaded question.
And maybe it's not one you need to, that you're supposed to know.
Maybe
the
it's not
to.
For me to know right now. No, dude, being in your 20s is all about just not knowing things, I feel like. You know that one meme? It's like a Silent Hill meme, and it's the person like running into the fog, and it's got that weird ambient music playing in the background. I don't know if you've seen it.
I'm not sure.
Just picture someone like running into the fog, and like I just feel like that perfectly summarizes the being in your 20s experience. But I mean, in terms of what's next for me, obviously finishing up the degree. I'm hoping, like I said previously, I would like to start taking commissions for people and kind of weasel my way into writing video game music, trying to network, things like that. It's just been difficult because unfortunately there aren't a lot of resources at my school for people who specifically want to do video game music. I feel like it's a very, I don't want to say closed off profession, but from what I've heard, it's kind of small. And it's a little difficult to get into, but once you know someone who does it, it's easier to kind of get into that sort of thing. So I'm looking towards getting into that industry, actually making money off of the art that I do, because that is the goal. To, I mean, obviously make art for art's sake, but also like pay the bills and things like that. Yeah, I don't have a set plan, but I know what I want. And I feel like when I want something bad enough, I make it work somehow because I'm stubborn. So,
oh, fair enough. Fair enough. What would be the best way for people to get in contact with you about anything, but maybe that too?
Yes, of course. So right now, I just feel like the best way to contact me is just send me a DM on social media. That's, I feel like especially with our generation, that's just the easiest way to reach someone. I do have an email, but nobody emails it. Like, I barely use it for anything, but it's there. I am planning on doing some research on, like, maybe creating, like, a Fiverr account or something just where I can, like, post my services or whatever. So people can, you know, put in requests that way. 'Cause I know they have websites for, like, voice actors to take work or, like, you know, visual artist commission. So I figured like might as well do like music commissions on one of those websites. So I'm going to do some research on that before I decide like which avenue I want to go to. But like I said, not a lot of resources in terms of, you know, getting into industry or even just, I haven't heard much about actually getting work as a composer in my time at undergrad and grad school, unfortunately. So that's just something I'm trying to figure out on my own right now. And it's difficult, but, you know, I'll make it work somehow. I know there is a way to do it. It's just I haven't gotten resources to do that yet, if that makes sense.
Well, it certainly is difficult. And if I had an answer, and not only would I tell you, I'd be doing it myself. But
You know what? Maybe it's just not for us to know.
It maybe it's not. That is the theme of this episode, it seems. I mean, yeah, I understand having the fate of your future in someone else's hands, because right now it
Yep.
is in the admissions offices of six different universities right now, and who the hell knows what's about to happen
Yeah,
in the
that
next.
sounds super lovely right now.
It sure does. But so we're coming to the conclusion of this episode, and I always like to give the guests one more opportunity. If there's anything that you want to talk about or mention about music, composition, the Firebird Saga, the Recusant's Dream, anything, what would that be?
Well, it is a lot. It's a lot of content. But I think I just want to extend my gratitude to the people who do want to hear about it and who do listen to my music, because there are a lot of times where I am of the belief I'm like, oh, nobody cares about like my silly little projects or my silly little my albums or whatnot. But then it's like I look around and people do care. And it's super cool that even though it's a small amount of people, that people do listen to my music. And I am hoping to grow that audience with this coming semester. I mean, I'm going to put a lot of focus on just getting more of my stuff out there because I do want a bigger audience.
Sure. And I'll be there to try to help to support you, because
Yay.
obviously I like your art as well. All right. Well, so here we are at the end of another episode. Thank you, composer Isabella Temperville, coming on to the Theorist Composer Collaboration to share your latest album and portion of the Firebird Saga in the album Recusant's Dream. All contact info, ways to reach Isabella and to listen to the album are going to be in the description. Isabella, thank you very much for coming onto the TCC once again.
Yes, and thank you for inviting me back.
Hello, this is Aaron again. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Theorist Composer Collaboration. I also want to give another big thank you to Isabella Temperville for coming back onto the podcast and for sharing her album, The Recusant's Dream. Isabella's contact info is listed in the description. I would appreciate it if you could show her some support. For further updates and notifications on the Theorist Composer Collaboration, make sure to follow our Instagram and Facebook pages. You can listen to future episodes through our host website, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. So make sure you subscribe to the platform of your choosing. If you want to monetarily support the work of the TCC, you can click the link to our Buy Me a Coffee page. All donations are highly appreciated. All of the relevant links to follow, listen to, and support the show are in the description. TCC episodes are posted every other week on Mondays, and don't miss our blog posts, which go live a few days before a new episode is added. Again, make sure to follow our social media accounts and relevant streaming platforms, because you won't want to miss it. But until then, this is Aaron, and thank you for joining the TCC.